In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thank you so much for joining us, and happy Friday, friends.
Happy Friday, Brett.
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I play video games, and my favorite Batman sidekick is Nightwing.
I'm Brian Truitt. I watch movies, and my favorite Batman sidekick is the OG sidekick, Alfred.
Very good choice. Kelly's off this week. She has got a lot of Game of Thrones on her mind right now, so... but we'll see her very soon. If this is your first time listening, welcome. New episodes of The Mothership drop every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. Hey, while you're on Apple Podcasts, we would really love it if you could write a quick review about the show. You help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us. And as a special thank you, we give you a shout out on the next episode. This week, we have not one but two listeners who gave us some love on Apple Podcasts. And I think a lot of it was tied to the podcast last week, which is what we talked about, TV shows from our childhood and some of the fun stuff that we watched when we were younger. The first one is from Lord Tarzan, who writes, "Keep up the great work and thanks." He talked a lot about some of the shows that he watched from his youth in the 70s and 80s, like Superman the Movie, The Muppet Show, Star Trek stuff. Even throws out $6 Million Man, which is awesome. But yeah, thanks for the shout out there. Another review from Monkey Mall, who says, "As a 58-year-old who has raised children during the 80s, this podcast hits on all geek cylinders for me. Thanks, Kelly, for keeping the boys in check, and thanks, Brian, for the ever-present beep-outs during the cast. It's good to hear someone excited about the subject matter."
I'm just glad I can curse here and not at home.
We're all glad, yeah. Yeah, with kids, it's a lot harder to swear.
A little bit,
This is kind of our outlet. But anyway, thank you both for the shout-outs. We really appreciate it. And again, like we said, it's all upside for you guys. We give you shout-outs on the show. You know, we get some really great feedback. So tell us what you want. We really love hearing from you. Not only can you get in touch with us through a review on Apple Podcasts, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod, or you can email us at mothershippod@usatoday.com. This week, let's start with a clip.
Don't kill me! Don't kill me, man! Don't kill me! Don't kill me, man!
I'm not going to kill you. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Next week marks the 80th anniversary of Batman's first appearance in Detective Comics 27. So happy birthday to the Dark Knight.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. DC do you think Batman has his own Batman theme party, or does he pick another hero?
Does he have a party though, or does he just eat lobster thermidor like by himself? Like in his big mansion.
Yeah. Or maybe someone throws a surprise party and then he's really steamed about it, but he kind of suffers through it for a little bit and then he kind of retreats.
Yeah, he kind of comes for 5 minutes and then like he goes off and like to the attic to stew about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good idea. DC Comics is celebrating the occasion with a special 96-page Detective Comics 1000 issue out Wednesday, featuring a bunch of short stories from an all-star list of creators, including Kevin Smith, Warren Ellis, Geoff Johns, Brian Michael Bendis, Jim Lee, Scott Snyder, and Tom King, a.k.a. friend of the podcast. So that's going to be worthy of the hashtag Long Live the Bat. But we also love Batman, and so we are going to be talking a lot about Bruce Wayne and the Dark Knight and all that fun stuff in our own awesome geek-tastic way. Let's start here before we dig into all the big legacy stuff. Brian, what was your first memory of Batman?
I think it was watching the old 60s series as, you know, kind of in syndication, like as a kid. I didn't get into comics until probably like, God, how was I old? Like 8, 9 around there. So I really didn't, I didn't read a Batman comic till probably I was like 9 or something, but I watched, I would watch the, you know, the Batman show, like, you know, after I came home from school when I was like 5, 6, you know, this was like, you know, early 80s, but still how kind of like weirdo pop, you know, kind of cool, kitschy, campy, slightly stupid, you know, kind of, I think, you know, that old show really appeals to a kid, you know, and just kind of like how cheesy it is, you know, not only kind of like the heroes, but also how kind of colorful, you know, the villains were, and how they're kind of, you know, and all the Biff, Bop, Pal, that, all that kind of thing. It's interesting kind of how the life that had both in the 60s and then I think, you know, in the early 80s before we had like the Frank Miller Dark Knight series and kind of like in the 89 Keaton movie and like things got really dark for Batman. You know, I think a lot of people had that, the thing like me where they kind of found Batman through the adult TV show first.
Yeah, that's a lot how I discovered him too. Between that and I watched a lot of Super Friends as a kid,
right,
which for a lot of listeners who are too young to remember, this was a cartoon in the 70s that featured the DC heroes. So it had Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman. I think those are the four that started it out, and then they branched out to more of a DC universe. But that was really, between those two, that was my first exposure to him. And yeah, like, I mean, it was campy, but it was also kind of like, he was kind of like a Superman version of Batman. He was very idealistic in a way, and he wasn't the brooding, dark, like intimidating character that you're used to seeing on, that we were used to seeing in comic books and in movies and in a lot of other stuff. So it was really, I mean, it was really interesting once you got older and you learned more about him, that transition. But yeah, at the time, like, you got this very, like, kind of almost cornball version of Batman, and you didn't get the real one until, I didn't get the real one until later on when I got the comic books and then when some of the other movies came out. So it's kind of really interesting how he started out that way. And I don't remember a lot of the 50s, 60s stuff. And so I don't know if that was the kind of thing they leaned into back then, or if it was still more of that gray suit, you know, blue and gray Batman suit and just kind of very straight, narrow superhero.
Well, I think the comics kind of stayed in that, not real dark, but not real light. I mean, I think he was still kind of broody and that sort of thing. But I think, you know, in the late 80s, I think, you know, when there was that real dark turn that brought a lot more people onto Batman comics and also Batman as a character, I think he was still, I mean, he, you know, Super Friends was like kind of one note for everybody. Everybody was like the same level of like kind of cheeseball corniness. And then things got darker. And I think the Batman animated series helped too. You know, that for a kind of an influential you know, cartoon like that was a lot darker than like even the Super Friends show was.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we have 80 years to crawl from Batman history. What do you think was the most pivotal moment in terms of, you know, the lifetime of Batman? Is there which one jumps out to you the most?
I think it kind of has to be the Frank Miller, that first Dark Knight, was it Dark Knight Returns? Because I think, you know, it was like kind of still on the heels of Watchmen at the time, because Watchmen deconstructed, you know, superheroes in a really interesting kind of like very adult way. And, you know, kind of Frank Miller had to, like, he had two things. He had, you know, the Batman Year One, which is real seminal as well, kind of like as it chronicled Batman's first year on the job. But Dark Knight Returns was like this whole other thing where it was, you know, it was in the future and Batman was old and like he really shouldn't be superheroing anymore. And, you know, kind of like it was this kind of like really futuristic, almost apocalyptic kind of version of that character that people just loved to death because it was so adult and so dark and so kind of like, unlike, you know, the Batman show people grew up with and like even the, you know, the comic books around it. And I think that then spawned, you know, Tim Burton's first, you know, that 89 Batman film it wasn't like, you know, it was dark and quirky, but it was definitely different than, like, again, the, you know, kind of the Adam West Batman that we knew before. And you can kind of see that the Miller stuff all the way to Batman v Superman and Justice League, and the Ben Affleck, the Batfleck, who was, you know, an older, kind of worn down, you know, getting too old for this kind of Batman that Miller had done too. So that kind of like moment in the 80s really kind of still resonates till now, from then till now. Mm-hmm.
The one that jumps out to me is the release of the 1989 Batman movie. This is the one with Michael Keaton as Batman, Bruce Wayne. Jack Nicholson is the Joker. That was Kim Basinger too, I believe, was in that one. I always mix up the Batman as Vicki Vale.
Yep.
But I feel like, you know, whereas Dark Knight Returns was kind of the first step towards seeing the darker version of Batman, I feel like the 1989 movie brought that to the masses. So for myself, I wasn't reading a lot of Batman at the time. And so for me, that movie was the first look at, wow, this is what Batman looks like, as a dark, gritty, like intimidating version of this character. And so that's what pulled me into a lot of the Batman comics, because I wanted to read more about that guy. I wanted to know what that Bruce Wayne was like and what that Batman character was like. And then I discovered a lot of the older Batman stuff. That's when I started looking at Dark Knight Returns and a lot of the other stuff that inspired that movie. But I feel like that kind of, to me, turned the corner on the character in terms of his perception among people. Because for the longest time, we had that kind of straight and narrow, like, kind of Dudley Do-Right kind of superhero version of him. And I think once that movie came out, it seemed like it turned a corner pretty quickly, and everyone started to see him more as that darker character. And it was reinforced with some other movies down the road, and then you see it again later with the Christopher Nolan stuff. But I feel like that, to me, was like a turning point in terms of how we perceived him as a character. And I think it played a little bit into why he's lasted so long, because, you know, he seems very human. He seems very flawed. And I think that's why a lot of people like him. It's, you know, he has these ideals as a hero, but he also is a human being too. And he's had to deal with loss and a lot of grief, and the way he's handled that. And in some ways, I think it's, for people that have dealt with that stuff, it's kind of their, you know, you see Batman as, wow, I wish I could, you know, do something like that. Or, you know, you kind of look at him. But, you know, I really think that movie played a big role.
It came at the exact right time too, because, you know, I think we were going from like new wave music, you know, colorful 80s kind of thing, into, you know, the grunge era, and kind of like, you know, people wanted a little bit more darkness in all of their culture, from music to movies. You know, I mean, that was right before Pulp Fiction really kind of hit too. And I think, you know, and we hadn't really had a superhero movie other than, you know, Christopher Reeve Superman movies. Superman 4 Quest for Peace was kind of a show. And I think, you know, it wasn't like now where there's like Marvel movies and DC movies. There was no superhero movies. And then kind of like Batman comes out of the gate, and, you know, culture needed him at that point. You know, kind of everybody was ready. And I think that, you know, kind of the Keaton Batman plus the Nicholson Joker was just, you know, kind of magic.
Yeah, and I feel like the transformation helped him stay around longer too, just because it was a different take on the character. And, you know, it's really impressive how long that he's been able to thrive in this environment. Now, we've seen him all across pop culture in various forms. What do you think, in terms of his legacy or his, you know, influence, what do you think has been the most important contribution, whether it's to comic books, whether it's to the way characters are built? Anything. What do you think has been one of his most valuable and most important contributions?
The Batarang, for sure. I just think, like you mentioned, I mean, kind of there's the seminal origin that came out of tragedy. Superman's origin involved, you know, him being flung from Krypton before, you know, parents and, you know, his whole planet was destroyed. So there was tragedy there, but it was more about kind of like, that was more about, you know, the immigrant experience. It was about, you know, kind of a baby landing in Kansas and being adopted, and kind of, you know, the nature versus nurture. You know, this is a person who has, like, you know, all the great superpowers. And it's because he has, like, this, you know, this kind and loving adoptive family, but that is why he becomes the hero, you know, the world needs him to be. Whereas on the other hand, Batman is born from tragedy. You know, kind of his parents are gunned down in front of him. You know, there is the trauma of that, the PTSD of that. And, you know, and then he has a thing with, you know, bats. And I think he figures out that, you know, he wants to scare criminals. He wants to put fear of, you know, not God, but Batman into them. And that is how he takes people down, because of fear. And, you know, kind of there's obviously the kind of the world's greatest detective stuff that's involved in it too, which I kind of think is kind of really interesting, but it kind of has taken a back seat to the fact of like him just punching, you know, the crap out of people and, you know, batteranging people upside the head, you know. So I think it's the fact of like you said, I can, it's a character born from trauma, and there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of relatability there, but also kind of like the badassness of that, or badass, as the case may be. I think people since the 80s have really glommed onto that, of just like this ass-kicking vigilante.
Yeah, I feel like he kind of helped make this concept of anti-hero a lot more popular.
Yep.
And it's not to say that comics didn't have that stuff. I mean, I think Punisher had, right around when the Batman movie came out, I think Punisher was starting to pick up on Marvel's side. You had Wolverine, too, who was kind of an anti-hero as well. But I think Batman really pushed that forward. He was kind of, I think, the really first face of that, where it's like, you know, he is this hero. And he has these sets of ideals, but he does it in a way that you wouldn't expect heroes to operate. You know, he's a little bit more physical. He's a little more, you know, intimidating and scary. And while I don't think he takes it to some extremes as maybe some other anti-heroes do, I think he kind of planted those first seeds as far as what an anti-hero character might look like, who's kind of operating on the fringe and still operating as a hero, and also operating in an environment where not everybody really kind of wants him around, not just the villains, but even the police and stuff. I mean, that's always been a central theme where, you know, if not for Commissioner Gordon, I mean, police would be all after him just as much as the villains are. So I think that's a big part of it too, whereas kind of he's this lone wolf that's operating on his own to make the city better, but he's kind of doing it in a way that's not something we're used to seeing all the time.
Also, and you cannot discount the villains in all of this. I mean, they are half of the reason why Batman has lasted for this long and is so important for this long. You mentioned anti-heroes. You know, name a Wolverine villain. Name a Punisher villain. There's some obscure people, you know, arch villains and stuff for those guys. But, you know, nothing's like the Joker or the Riddler or Penguin. I mean, you throw those names out to people, you know, people aren't even comics fans. They know who the Joker is.
His villains carry their own TV show now.
Yeah.
So they don't even need Batman. He's that big.
The great thing about those villains, too, is they're all reflections of Batman. You don't have another character like that where, you know, Superman has a rogues gallery, but it's just kind of like, Lex Luthor's kind of cool, but, you know, it's not iconic. Other than, like, the Spider-Man villains, there is no other kind of, like, group of baddies that's just as iconic as the Bat villains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to the fun stuff, because this is where we talk about our favorites, because there's a lot of Batman stuff all over the place. I mean, he's everywhere practically. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite Batman stuff across all forms of pop culture. Let's start movies. Brian, what's your favorite Batman movie and why?
It's probably got to be The Dark Knight. I think there's a lot of people that now like look on the movie and like have this weird problem with the toxic masculinity, and like I think there's people that weirdly judge it for strange reasons. But I don't think there's any, you know, that is just a great movie. Not it's like Captain America: Winter Soldier for me. In that, you know, there's a superhero in it, but it's just a great movie, and like the superhero is just kind of like, you know, just it's not even like that important. It's just a great movie. And I, you know, Heath Ledger's fantastic. You know, that joke, that's the best Joker of all time, I think. And, you know, it's Christopher Nolan really nailed what it would be like to be in Gotham. It would be like, you know, kind of like Batman having to deal with like the fact that there's a bunch of people trying to be like him and trying to be heroes. And he's like, and, you know, dressing up in, you know, hockey pads and a mask. And he's like, don't do this. You know, I'm the hero this city, you know, needs, but maybe doesn't deserve all that kind of psychological junk. But he's like, you know, let me handle this. He's struggling with the fact of like, does he still want to be a hero, or does he want to have like a girlfriend, you know? the relatable things like that. It's just a fantastic movie, you know, top to bottom, and just so artistic. And we've not seen other than like maybe Black Panther and a few of the other Marvel movies, has a superhero movie been just that artistically done and just that, you know, kind of just magical.
Mm-hmm. I think I picked Dark Knight too, and I think the main a big reason for it is, you know, it gets to why the relationship between the Batman and the Joker is so fascinating, and it's why it's probably one of the best hero villain combos ever in comics. Is you have this guy that is kind of, you know, he's a vigilante, but he's got this set of ideals in terms of how he conducts things as a hero. And you have this other character who is going out of his way to try to push him to his limit and to get him to break whatever this code is that he's dealing with. And The Dark Knight hits at that really well. And again, the performances from Christian Bale and Heath Ledger help make this work. But, you know, there's the scene where he's got the two sets of people held hostage. And either one can choose to save themselves by blowing up the other. I forget where they were trapped. It was like on a train or something like that. But just basically, you know, the Joker's always been about, let's generate chaos so I can bring out the worst in people, so I can prove to Batman that everybody's just as awful as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman always had this higher belief of, no, you know, humans are different. They're not you. You're crazy, all this stuff. And just that constant tug of war between the two of them. And I think this movie was the best at capturing all that. And it's a big reason why that relationship between those two characters has always been really interesting to watch. And, you know, it's why the Joker stands out as probably, I mean, he's more recognizable, I think, than a ton of superheroes that are in comic books. I mean, that's how big Batman has been. And that duel between the two of them over the years has been so, you know, valuable and interesting to watch. So, you know, I think that, you know, we've seen the Joker before in other movies, but I just think this one and the way that those two work together was by far like the best representation.
I mean, that's an all-timer of a yin and yang situation. I mean, you have the best of humanity, someone who wants to, you know, to do the right thing and to be the hero of a city, you know, no matter what, even if it means him being seen as a bad guy, you know, he will do whatever it takes. And then you have the opposite of like, you know, the very worst of us, and, you know, and just them being kind of mirror aspects of each other.
So let's get to TV. You know, TV's interesting. There are two, I feel like, really big TV series in the mix, and then there's some stuff here and there where he's in. But what's your favorite TV series?
God, I still got to go back to the old 60s show. I mean, it's a lot worse probably now as an adult than it was as a kid. But you just have to, like, respect how, like, just bad crazy it was, you know. I can't even imagine, like, if you're like in the 60s and you're watching that for the first time, you're like, what in the world is this? We're now kind of like, we're used to these characters, you know, Batgirl and, you know, all these kind of side characters and things like that. But just like, look back on it, it's just like, it's both kind of like insane, but it's also kind of really lovable, because it's just, you know, it's at a simpler time. You know, they're saying things that just like are kind of cringeworthy, because you're like, really, should you be saying this? You know, because like in a more politically correct time, it's just like there's a lot of double entendres that just kind of like seem like way left field. And it's just, but it's a hoot to watch still. Gotham has been a really interesting take on, you know, it's the Batman show without Batman. It's nuts, and I think it's done a lot of interesting things with the core characters, especially Penguin. I think kind of that's, if people are going to look back and see that show as kind of like a redefining thing for that character, especially. And there's going to be an Alfred show too. So, you know, people just love Batman a lot of, you know, kind of in every way. But I think that first Batman show, the Adam West show, was just fantastic. And it still has a lot of heart and humor and kind of like, there's still stuff to enjoy about that now.
Mm-hmm. I find myself torn, because I really like the Batman series from the 60s too, but I also really love Batman the Animated Series, which aired in the 90s, and I thought was a fantastic cartoon for its time. I mean, it was, and it, you know, it leaned in on the darker version of Batman, and it did it in a really smart way. It had incredible voice acting. Kevin Conroy was Batman. But then also Mark Hamill is the Joker, who I think is probably the underrated best Joker performance out there. He was a fantastic voice for the Joker. And I thought that show just had some really fun, interesting stuff. It leaned in a lot to his detective work too, which I thought was, like you mentioned, was kind of an underrated element of Batman. I felt like it leaned into a lot of the detective stuff a little more in terms of him trying to solve crimes and things like that. It was just a well-written show, well done across the board. And I find myself torn because I like that old 60s show, but the animated series was so well done and so well thought out. And there were so many memorable characters and performances in that it's really been tough for me to choose. I can't really pick one.
Yeah. The weird thing is, like, I've only seen like a few of those Batman animated shows. I've never sat down and like watched the whole thing. And I feel like I probably should. Because, you know, everybody says, you know, they just love it to pieces. And, it's, you know, it was this kind of like, you know, in the 90s, that was like kind of like the seminal Batman culture thing, more so than, you know, kind of Val Kilmer and George Clooney's bat nipples and things like that. That were kind of like, that were forgettable, like, you know, little blips in bad history. Whereas, you know, that animated show just really stoked a lot of things. I mean, Harley Quinn appeared on that cartoon before she ever was in comics or a movie or anything.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing about that cartoon is it dived into a lot of the lesser villains, which were still really good. I mean, you know, the movies already had stuff like the Joker and Riddler and Catwoman, but then you got some other lesser villains too, like Man-Bat and Killer Croc and some other characters too that they got into there. So it was a really good like look at the entire gallery of villains that Batman deals with regularly. So it was, if you haven't watched it yet, definitely watch it. It's wonderful. Okay, video games. Do you have
start.
A favorite
Batman? Oh, you start. That's, okay. That's your thing.
All right. I have to go with Batman Arkham City, which is, I liked it because this was the first, you know, Batman had this reboot in, I think, 2009, which is when Arkham Asylum came out. Arkham City was the follow-up to that, and it was wonderful because it pretty much gave you all of Gotham to explore. Instead of going through just the insane asylum, you had all of Gotham City, and you had all his tools and a lot of his vehicles and things like that at your disposal. So it was, you know, you got the full-fledged Batman experience. You know, you're flying, you're floating through Gotham like you're flying. You know, you're perching on different spots, watching criminals do things and trying to pinpoint how you're going to attack. You face the usual villains that you would see across Batman lore. It was the closest to feeling like you're Batman. That I think that's the best argument I can give for Arkham City, is that it's the closest feeling you get to getting to what Batman is like. So that's my pick. What about you?
I think it's the Telltale games. I like the Arkham City game, like the, you know, the Arkham Knight and Arkham City and all those. I am terrible at video games though. So while I like the fact of like how they take all the core characters and kind of like put their own kind of gritty, you know, nasty spin on them, I can't get through these games to save my life because I'm terrible. So I think something like the Telltale games are really cool because they're more of a story. And, you know, it's you don't have to, like, you know, it's cool to be Batman, you know, to like sling batarangs and things like that. But I like the Telltale games because it's more about being Batman, like, you know, the personality, you know, and being Bruce Wayne, and you know, you have those games are really cool in terms of the story, because they really take an interesting look at Gotham and putting Gotham in a more modern place in terms of characters and stories and things. And it's kind of cool to, like, they have like a new Penguin, where Penguin's like some British guy who used to go to school with Bruce Wayne, and the Joker isn't even the Joker. It's this weird guy named John who, you know, Bruce Wayne meets, and, you know, they're kind of first friends, but, you know, they meet like in Arkham Asylum because like Bruce Wayne's like thrown in there, and, you know, they meet and then like they kind of become weird allies. So it's another thing that kind of takes a new dimension to the Bat mythos. But puts you, you know, would you like to say this to Commissioner Gordon? Or would you like to say this? I mean, there's four, you know, kind of, you get like two or four things to say to people. But then it all kind of, like, the great things about those Telltale games, or rest in peace, is the fact that, you know, kind of everything that you did changed everything else about that game. You know, it changed with the decisions you made. And I love those kind of things. That's why I love Mass Effect so much, is because, you know, the video gamey stuff is cool, but it's more about like inhabiting these characters and that, like, having more of a say in kind of what they say.
All right, we've saved the best category for last, which is favorite Batman comic series or book or graphic novel. Brian, start us off.
God, there's so many.
I know.
Arkham Asylum, the Grant Morrison graphic novel is just insane. Just how insane it is. The Dark Knight Returns is fantastic. The Court of Owls, Scott Snyder's kind of New 52 reboot of Batman was really neat because they introduced the Court of Owls, and it was like, you know, it was kind of a new, we hadn't seen like a new Batvillain in a while. And, you know, it was this secret society of like weird mask wearing people that pretty much have been running Gotham City this whole time. There's like connections to, you know, Bruce Wayne's family, and it, you know, they give him a different kind of like antagonist that he hasn't had before. You know, it's where this like, then it's just like a crazy Joker or something like that. It's more about like the one, what happens if the 1% of Gotham is like the most evil f***ers ever. And so I think that's, it's a different kind of villain and story than we've seen before. But there's so many. The Joker, the Azzarello graphic novel was fantastic. Just so you know, you go back to like Long Halloween and Dark Victory and Haunted Night. I think it's Haunted Night. Dark Victory and Long Halloween were kind of the major two back in the day. There's just so many. I think Comixology is like running like a huge sale on like all the digital like, you know, kind of must read bat stuff. Like just go, they're like $4 each. Just buy a whole bunch. You know, ask your wife or your significant other for like an early birthday present or something, and just go to town, because you know there's a lot of great bat stuff that's out there.
Okay, so I have two picks. The first one was Batman Year One, which looks at kind of the first year of Batman being Batman and digs a little more deeper into the relationship he has with Commissioner Gordon. So I thought that was a really interesting take on the character, and one that we hadn't really seen yet through the course of his history. So that was the first one. The other one that jumped out to me was Nightfall, which is what Dark Knight Rises was based on. And it's interesting because this is a Batman where you see him pushed to his absolute limit. He's doing too much. Everyone's letting him know he's doing too much, but he can't obviously stop himself because he feels this obligation. You know, Bane breaks his back, and then you see him kind of realize why he's so valuable and realize why he needs to be at full strength. So it's a really excellent story. It's a pretty long story, but it's really worthwhile. And again, another interesting take on Batman, and just seeing him, you know, kind of driven down to his lowest point and then coming back up, I thought was a really great story. So yeah, those are my picks. Okay, before we let you go this week, one quick programming note. We're going to be off next week, no podcast that week. It's spring break. No, we're not going to take the mothership to Daytona Beach or party or anything like that. We're just taking the week off. We're going to be back on April 5th, where we're going to talk about Shazam, which is the latest superhero film from DC Comics and Warner Brothers. So we'll have plenty of that to talk about. So once again, just as a reminder, no pod next week, and we're back on April 5th with Shazam. Listeners, it's your turn. What's some of your favorite Batman stuff? TV, movies, video games, comics. What do you love most about the character? Let's talk about it on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod. You can also tweet at us directly. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
I'm at Brian Truitt.
And don't forget, you can email us also. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. That'll do it this week. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to our pilot/producers of the Mothership, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode moving forward, you can subscribe to The Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. And if you happen to be there, we would absolutely love a review or a rating. It helps other people find the show. And again, we always love the feedback. We greatly appreciate it. If you don't listen to Apple Podcasts, you can also find us on SoundCloud or Stitcher. Pretty much any app where you can listen to podcasts, you will find us. So that'll do it. Happy birthday, Batman. Nerds out.
I'm Batman.